At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Here's another interesting thing, and I know I'm all over the map with this, but I'm just excited to have you on here and get your take on this, is I follow the same stuff that you follow. In 2021, we had the net disposable income per household. It reached the highest level in forever. You know, if you look at the Fed's chart, I think it was the St. Louis Fed's, their chart for the disposable income chart, you can see the chart, it gradually goes up, and then 2020 and 21, it just goes out the roof and back down through. I guess my roundabout question is, there's still so many jobs openings out there.
Yeah.
And now people are saying, well, you know, we're going to start cutting jobs. Well, I go on my way to the office every day. I pass several factories or factory areas or, you know, those kind of areas out in Chicago. Every one of them has a for hire sign. And every one of them has, you know, we'll offer you bonuses and pensions and all this other stuff. Where is everybody? Because the JOLT index that was posted a month ago was at 11.2 million job openings. Then it all of a sudden dropped to 10. Where's everybody going? Are people retiring? Or that's where I'm kind of confused on the job market. Where do you think all the people went?
So, I think the latest number that I saw was that there's... For every job opening out there, there's 0.6 unemployed people, which means essentially that there's almost two job openings per person out there. And you're right, it doesn't make much sense. And it kind of goes back to then, when do you actually see a recession? Well, recessions happen when people run out of money. Right. When people run out of money, they don't have the ability to spend, but they don't have the ability to spend. Businesses make less money. And we're still kind of in this space, and people are going to think this is crazy, but the reality is people still have money.
Right.
People still have a lot of money.
Right.
And that money has to go down according to the Fed if you want to reduce inflation. Actually, it does have to happen because people are willing to pay high prices for things. So I'll give you an example. I was at Cedar Point. You know, you're from the Midwest.
Yeah, I know where it is.
An amusement park.
Roller coaster park.
Awesome roller coaster park, and they have this thing called the Fast Pass, and then they have this thing called the VIP Fast Pass. Now, I don't remember the exact prices, but let's just say a ticket into Cedar Point is $70. If you want the Fast Pass, you're going to pay another $100. If you want the VIP Pass Fast Pass, you're paying another $100-$150 on top of that. So $300 or something per person. Then don't quote me on that. I don't remember the exact number, but it's a lot more.
For one day, for one,
it's for one day,
too, right?
One day per person. So that's what we got. Me and a few others, we got that fast, the highest tier one. And in the past, if you got that fast one, you were waiting maximum 15 minutes on one of the top rides. Like you were able to, most rides you go and wait 5 minutes and you're on.
Yeah.
Well, when I went recently, there was multiple rides with an hour plus wait, which meant there was a lot of people paying $200-$400 a person to be there. And I was like, you know, it's just interesting to see that. I mean, it's a lot of money, and people are still willing to spend money. And when people have that ability to spend, what does that mean? Well, now Cedar Point is going to say these fast pass lines are not fast enough. Why don't we, instead of charging $150 extra, how about we just charge $1,000 extra?
Yeah.
Because even if we cut it down by 50%, we're still going to make a bigger profit. And, you know, there you start to see more of the inflationary effect where the price of things keep going up because people are still willing to pay the higher price for things. And that it takes time for all these things to trickle through the economy. Like the effects of higher mortgage rates take time to be absorbed into the economy. Right. Because mortgage rates just hit 7%. Like it hasn't been at 7% for 9 months.
Right.
And mortgage rates are at 7% for 9 months or 12 months. That's when the effect of 7% mortgage rates get absorbed through the economy, and people then will make decisions based off of the higher mortgage rates. Sellers will cut prices based off of the higher rates because of the days on market and because of, you know, that's just the market. But 3-4 months ago, we were at a 5% mortgage rate,
yeah,
right? And 3-4 months before that, we were still at a 3% mortgage rate.
Right.
So, you know, it's all these, like, we're watching this economy change in real time, but we're expecting the changes to happen instantaneously.
Yeah.
But these things take time. And there, it's just like, my brother is a dentist. He has a dental practice, and he's been talking about how difficult it's been for him to find a front desk worker. And this is in the Midwest. And, he's relatively newer to this practice, but before he got into it, he bought into the practice last year. The previous owner, I think it was paying like $15 or $16 an hour for a front desk worker. My brother raised the prices to, I think, $20 or 21 bucks. And now he's trying to find a front desk worker. And he's like, I can't find anybody for under $25 or $26 an hour from last year. And it's people just, you know, people want more money because the cost of things go up. And now if you are the employer, either you have to pay or you don't get a worker.
Right.
And, you know, it's good for the employee in the short term. But then if the economy continues to slow and the business owner or the businesses are not making as much money, well, small businesses don't have, you know, millions of dollars of reserves to just dig into and play forever. And that's where then you start to see businesses get hurt. And that's when you see more layoffs. I mean, you just take a look at the tech sector. Apple's doing kind of good compared to the others. Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Alphabet, Meta, all these, you know, April of this year, I was in San Diego, I was in California for 2 months. And that was when we started to see the initial slowdown in the tech sector. And I was in California, I was living in San Diego for a little while. And I was meeting a lot of people that worked in the tech field. And I was meeting people that were working at Facebook, particularly talking to them. And each and every one of them said, we expect layoffs to happen. We just don't know when. Like everybody at Facebook, at Meta, Facebook part of it, everybody was saying that we know layoffs are coming. We just don't know when. And so everybody was on edge because of that. And especially when you talk about these growth companies, higher interest rates affect their cost of capital. Means it affects how cheaply they can borrow money and how expensive it is to service their debt. Because just like we were talking about, businesses don't borrow money at a 30-year fixed rate.
Right.
They borrow money at shorter terms. And so as interest rates go higher, when the business's debt readjusts, now they got to pay the higher interest rates. And so, you know, the companies that are high growth, they have high debt, and the higher debt affects their bottom line. And if they cannot continue paying the debt, they're going to have to cut costs. There was a study, and I'm just throwing up random facts, but there are numbers. There was a study that was released in the just recently in the end of October, talking about zombie companies. And what they said was zombie companies grew by 10% between 2021 and 2022. And a zombie company, there's a lot of definitions, but the kind of common definition of a zombie company is it's a company that doesn't make enough money to service its debt. And so they've been relying on outside capital to survive and grow. In America, as of about now, there's approximately 200 zombie companies. And these are publicly traded companies. I'm not talking about just regular private companies. 200 companies listed on the stock market that are not making enough money to service their debts. And so again, it's allowing time for the higher interest rates to get absorbed into the market. And while our economy and people are working to absorb these higher interest rates keep going higher. And so it's understanding the effect of that and understanding that the effects of this don't happen in 2 weeks. They happen over time. So, you know, over the next 6 to 9 months, as we start to absorb the effects of 7% mortgage rates, well, then we'll see where interest rates actually go. And it takes longer to absorb as interest rates go up. It's easier to absorb when interest rates go down because then you just refinance and cut your costs.
Yeah. So the next question I have, and this will be the last one on the housing sector, is the one of the questions I always have that I ask people is, you know, we know house prices are going up. You just said, you know, the average price, if you bought a house last year in 2021, $411,000, put your payment at 15-20 at a 3% rate. Now that same house is going up, you know, that payment would cost you $2,700.
Yeah.
So the question I have is, so what do people do? This is the dilemma I have. I know house prices are going out the roof, mortgage rates are going up, but then on the flip side of things, you see rentals going up, you know, 18%. I think last year's total adjustment was about 18-20%. This year rents are already up, say, I think it's 12 or 16%. So if you need a place to live, you're kind of like at the mercy of everything because rents are skyrocketing and the price, you know, so what do you do?
You are 100% right. And so this is the first point that I want to, well, I'm going to answer that question, but this is the first thing that I want to say is something that really bugs me. And this is where I get so passionate about on YouTube is inflation disproportionately hurts the poor, the middle class, and the financially uneducated.
Right.
Because when you don't understand money, you will continue to get screwed over by the system. And we start to point fingers. Everybody points fingers at what's causing inflation. It's this, it's that, it's this and that. The reality is the inflation ultimately goes down to the money printing, the Federal Reserve Bank and the government. And that is what disproportionately hurts regular people. And it's why it's so important to get financially educated, because now what do you do? Well, if your rate, if your income did not go up by 20%, well, you're going to have to downsize. And the best thing to do, the absolute best thing to do is downsize. Live somewhere where you can afford, because this craziness will eventually come to an end.
Yeah.
And it's going to take time. And this is where you don't want to be the person who is stretched too far just so you can maintain a certain lifestyle, so you can appear a certain way. And then all of a sudden your income goes down and now you're left with an asset or a payment that you can't afford. And so what does that mean? If you're going to buy a home, buy something that you can afford comfortably. Don't get an adjustable rate because we don't know where interest rates are going to be in 5 years. If interest rates go down, you can just refinance. Buy something that you can afford comfortably, or rent something that you can afford comfortably. You don't have to buy a home. Buying a home isn't always the smartest decision. You don't always make money when you buy a home. In fact, your home is a money pit until you sell it. And then you have to hope that you can sell your home for a profit. And you can't always sell your home for a profit. And you have to understand that owning a home also means you got to deal with all the repairs, moving costs, the property taxes, the property insurance. If home prices go up, your property taxes go up, your property insurance payments go up. And then you have to deal with, oh, we want a better kitchen. Oh, let's finish the basement. You're going to do all the renovations. And if you cannot support those payments while having money left over to save and invest, you're buying a home for the wrong reasons, because now you're just hoping that one day you'll be able to sell it for a profit.
Right.
I personally would rather see you rent a home or buy something smaller. That way you have cash to constantly put aside and invest every month, because now you're actually buying something for the purposes of making money. When you buy a home to live in, you're not buying it with the purpose of making money. You're buying it with the purpose of making memories. And this is where understanding the difference between an asset and a liability, your home might be an asset, but it's a liability up until the point you sell it.
Got it.
And so, you know, the difficult truth is this is the time where you're going to need to downsize. You want to live smaller, so you have extra cash put aside, because if we continue to see pain in the economy, the extra cash will help you to not only survive through it, but then also take advantage of opportunities. If we don't see a recession, if things keep booming and, you know, things, everything is fine, well, then you can take that extra cash and go to Disney World or live bigger. You live smaller for a little while. Go to Cedar Point. Buy the fast tickets.
So that's what we need to do. We need to change the majority mindset to the minority mindset.
Hey, exactly. We got to get the financial education out there so we can make better decisions with our own money and not rely on other people to take care of us.
Got it. Okay. I'm going to switch you around a little bit. Stock market in the investments. I mean, stocks are down, what, 30, 35% this year. So I like to try to, in my sphere, I try to educate people on real estate and how to finance properties and so forth. But since I have you on here, I wanted to expand this base because your knowledge is expansive. So you know the stock markets, you know bonds, you know cryptocurrencies and everything. So I just want to touch base on those, just kind of, you know, pick your brain a little bit about the stock market. Do you think it's predicated on what the Federal Reserve is doing as well? And do you see a bottom here, or is it going to be the same thing with real estate? As they trickle rates up and up and up, we're going to continue to see stocks, you know, dwindle down and down and down. And I get why they do it, because you explained, you know, the cost of money goes up, so corporations aren't making as much money. But what's your take on that part of it, the stock market in general right now?
So the short answer is it doesn't matter. The long answer to that is, in the short term, stocks don't have to be linear with reality. They can be completely illogical in the short term. And this is where everybody tries to make smart decisions, but sometimes smart decisions aren't profitable decisions, especially when it comes to the stock market, which is very emotional. And the reason why it's emotional is because the stock market is so liquid. You can see it go up and down very quickly. People can panic and sell, and people can get excited and buy with the click of a button. And that's where now you can see big movements in the stock market up and down based off of headlines. And this is where you want to not confuse short-term movements with what's actually happening, because in the long term, the stock market does tend to move much more linearly with things that are happening in the economy. So what does that mean? Your strategy is going to predicate, it's going to decide how you put money in the stock market. And let's just talk about generally for people, the vast majority of people, the best way to invest in the stock market would be through passive strategy, which means now anytime you get paid, a portion of your paycheck is just going to be automatically invested into maybe a portfolio of ETFs or index funds, maybe mutual funds, but primarily low-cost ETFs and index funds, where now it does not matter what's happening in the stock market. It does not matter what's happening in the economy. Every time you get paid, every 2 weeks, money is automatically invested into the market, whether the market's up and whether the market's down. The only thing you would change is when the market's down, maybe you invest even more. And that's for most people, as a long-term investor, that is the best way to make money. Now, I'm not a trader, so I'm not even going to touch on that. But that is going to be for 90% of people the best way to do it. Now, if you're like, I want to be a little bit more involved, I like researching companies, I like looking at numbers, I like studying earning statements, great. Then you can be more of an active investor. And this doesn't mean trading. This means now you're looking at a company, say it's Amazon. And what you're going to do is you're going to now understand the company, read its financials. You're going to understand the executive structure. You're going to understand its assets. You're looking at the cash flow statement, the balance sheet. You're looking at the quarterly statements, the annual statements. You're listening to the earnings calls. And then based off of these things, you're going to come up with a valuation of the company. And then you're going to compare that to the current valuation of the company. And if what you believe this asset is worth is selling for cheaper than what you think it's worth, this creates an opportunity now for you to come in and buy. And the cheaper the asset, the more you want to buy. So what you're doing is you find your list of companies that you like, and now you're just waiting for a good price. You're waiting for them to become undervalued where you can buy them at a discount. Like when you see Black Friday happen after Thanksgiving here, everybody's fighting to buy that TV from Best Buy or Walmart.
Yeah, they're fighting over it.
They're fighting over it. But when the stock price tanks for a good asset, Nobody's buying.
Yeah.
And this is where now investors find the opportunities. And that's what you want to be doing, is doing the research beforehand, finding the right company, finding what it is that you want to invest in. Then already being prepared, you have the cash. And then when you see that opportunity, when that asset price falls to a good point, that's when you can come in and buy. But you also don't have to buy it all at once. I talk about something that I do, which is called drip investing, which is now I buy it in phases on the way down. So if the stock that I like falls 10 to 15%, I buy, if I was another 10 to 15%, I buy even more, buy more aggressively, and I buy in phases on the way down and more aggressively on the way down. But the ultimate key is being patient, finding the right opportunity, and holding it for the long term, because it doesn't have to be that complicated. Like, there was a study done early 2000s where they put a monkey up against some top hedge funds, and the monkeys won.
They won,
They just picked the stock, and over the long term, when you subtract the fees of these money managers, many times, you know, if you just invest in a good company for the long term, for long enough, you can come out okay. But if you can do the research, you could get an even better return. But this is the psychological part of when you see things crash, you see the world ending, you don't want to be panicking and selling if you have a good asset, if you don't need the money. It's when you want to be coming and buying and looking for the opportunities there.
God, I love your comments. And my his beard's black, mine's gray. I'm learning from this guy here. I've learned over my days of trading and everything. And I'll say I traded because, you know, it's like, oh, I buy a lot of stuff from Amazon. Amazon's got to be a good stock. Let's just buy it. Well, you just went through the whole laundry list of things that I can guarantee you that 99% of the people don't do. So then I started buying into ETFs because it's just a basket of goods that I don't have to do all my due diligence to say, okay, because then if that one company plummets, then it's like, oh man, I lost all my money.
Exactly. So,
quick take. Are you on the, just so everybody, for legality purposes, we aren't the investors. We aren't giving you advice. We aren't telling you what to do. We're not financial planners. Whatever I need to say to get out of legal problems, I'm saying it, nor Jaspreet or myself are telling you what to do or whatever. So that's that piece of the puzzle. But
yeah,
have you done anything with the crypto markets? I got Ethereum and Bitcoin, and I was dollar cost averaging up. And then I'm like all the way up to like 60 for Bitcoin. And then I'm like, okay, enough's enough.
Yeah. Kind of like you
back, do you think?
So I believe in crypto. I believe too. In the value of blockchain. I dollar cost average, just like what you were saying. I buy every day. I still buy every day. And for me, it's more on the speculative part of my total investment portfolio. I invest in five things. I invest in my own business, Briefs Media, and along with that, some startups that I invest in. I invest in real estate, then stocks, then crypto, then physical gold. So those are the five things that I invest in that order. Got so it. Crypto is one of the smaller investments that I have, but it's more of a fun investment, more speculative. And it's something that I believe in for the long term. I think there's a lot of value in the blockchain. And, you know, again, I'm not sitting here trying to watch the markets every single day. I just dollar cost average every day, and I'm buying a little bit every day.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. And that's what, and it, this takes us back to the housing market. You know, so many people want to use their housing market like it's Bitcoin. Well, I got to buy today, and it's got to go up 20% in value tomorrow, or it's a bad investment. I keep telling people, if you don't plan on staying in that house, you know, 5 years or more, don't even buy. Because you're not, even if it was an up market, not like the up markets we have right now, but even if the average market was the returns that we usually get 4%, 5%, 6%, you're still going to lose money. So unless you really want to, you're going to stay in that house, don't buy. So, you know, still people say, I FOMO real estate. Well, it's what I do for a living. It has been good investments for 50 years, but it doesn't mean, you know, you don't have, you should be trying to time it or whatever. Yeah. So, that was it. You knocked it out of the park. These are exactly the things that I was reaching out to you for. I just want your context. I learn from you every day. I greatly appreciate your videos every day. For those out there that don't know who Jaspreet is, you will, because I'm going to have him down below. I'm going to put him on my channels, because you are the ultimate source that I go to. I'm being honest with you.
I appreciate that, man.
There's not a lot of places I go out there, because there's an agenda somewhere. You tell it as it is. You just said, don't buy a house unless you're really ready. Don't buy a house. This might not be timing for you. You know, maybe don't buy stocks. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to say every time you talk to somebody, it's like, gotta buy. So you knocked it out of the park, and I can't thank you enough for joining me. I'm going to have all Jaspreet's information down below. He's a fantastic, his YouTube channel is crazy awesome. I suggest you subscribe to his channel and do everything, you know, watch what he has to say. It doesn't mean you have to do it, but there's knowledge there that you're not getting in school. You're not getting in college. You're not even getting in grad school. So he's my source that I go to. And I would reach out to you guys and say, you know, subscribe to his systems. He just said all his newsletters are free. Join his systems. I'm on there. I subscribed from day one a couple of years ago. I've watched you grow and it's amazing, man. And I'm thrilled for your success. And I hope you would join me at some other times that we can talk about, you know, what's going on in the economy, what's going on with the Fed and everything else. So I can't thank you enough. Is there anything you would like to end with, or y'all good?
I appreciate it, man. Okay. You've been awesome. You're very kind, and you have some very nice words. I really appreciate that. And definitely check out those links down in the description.
Yeah, there you go, my man. So that's what I wanted you to end with. So I love that from day one that I saw it. So Jaspreet, thank you so much for joining us. I hope I can have you back again sometime. And you've been so kind to join me. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the knowledge. Appreciate it. Take care, man. Appreciate it.